पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
ॐ दट् ब्रह्मन् इज़् इन्फिनिट् एण्ड् दिस् यूनिवर्स् इज़् आल्सो इन्फिनिट् दि इन्फिनिट् प्रोसीड्स् फ्रम् दि इन्फिनिट् टेकिङ्ग् दि इन्फिनिट्यूड् आफ् दि इन्फिनिट् यूनिवर्स् It remains as the infinite Brahman alone. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. In our last class, we have been discussing about the Shabda Pramana. Shabda Pramana means the ultimate and only means of knowledge for supersensuous knowledge. And they are called Upanishads. Veda, Upanishad, Shastra, these are all synonymous words. Here, Brahma Vidya. Upanishad means Brahma Vidya. That is the first meaning. Second meaning of the Upanishad is the book. A book is nothing but the teachings of the Guru. And what the Guru teaches is only the scriptures. Through his own spiritual struggles and experiences, he guides the would-be aspirants, but ultimately it is all traceable to the scripture, Veda. And Vedas are called apaurushaya, not human inventions or works of human beings, but it is nothing but as revealed by the divine grace to sincere aspirants over a long period of time. Here, we have to understand one very important point. Even though our ancestors had drawn a line and said, after this, the experiences as recorded by their disciples, which used to be called Upanishads, only they will remain as Upanishads. They retain the name Upanishads, but henceforward it is not possible to call Upanishad. But we have to understand Gita is a Upanishad, even though it is called the essence of the all the Upanishads. In fact, the experiences of seers, saints, sages, rishis across space, time, in whatever religion, they are all nothing but Upanishads. If we take the meaning of the Upanishad, that which is the highest truth, as revealed to these people by the grace of God, then we have to understand they are nothing but Vedas. Second, the meaning of the Upanishad is Atmagnanam, Brahmagnanam, Brahma Vidya. And therefore, the teachings of Christ, Rama, Krishna, Buddha, Chaitanya, Jesus Christ, Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Eviracharya, every realized soul is nothing but the highest truth. And once a person becomes identified with God, God only manifests through that particular instrument, the body and mind. Languages may differ, but the truth they point out is exactly the same. So, the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna and especially the important works of Swami Vivekananda, that is the four yogas, of course, other things also, they are nothing but Upanishads. The Gospel of Holy Mother is nothing but the Upanishad, the Eternal Companion, and the conversations with Swami Shivananda for seekers of God, that is also nothing but an Upanishad, the imitation of Christ, the practice of the presence of God, and the works of Rumi, they're all nothing but pure Upanishads. When these Upanishads are interpreted in their own local languages, they, by convention, are called secondary scriptures, but whosoever's teaching
Whichever type of book leads us to the highest truth, that must be titled as Upanishad. And this is also called Shabda Pramana, we said. So, about Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, it contains all the ideas contained in Virudhara Upanishad, and this also contains a Mahavakya, that is a sentence which points to the complete identity between the individual and Brahman, Jivatma and Paramatma, is called a Mahavakya. Aham Brahmasmi is that Mahavakya. As mentioned yesterday, Adi Shankaracharya had chosen 10 Upanishads to comment upon. And the essence of all these Upanishads is only one. Thou art that, practice and experience for yourself. I am that, Aham Brahmasmi. And this commentary of Shankaracharya is voluminous, because the Upanishad itself is voluminous. And on that Upanishad, one of his own disciples, Sureshwaracharya, had commented again, and that's what we discussed yesterday. It is called Vartika. And what is the speciality of this Vartika? Uktam, Anuktam, Duruktam. Whatever has been said is again commented. If the writer feels that probably ordinary people like us may not understand Shankaracharya's writings or certain passages, so he elaborates them, tries to simplify them for people like us. And maybe Shankaracharya, either deliberately or unintentionally, might have omitted, and which maybe his disciple thinks is a very important point, then that is called Anuktam, not said by the original commentator. So, he also completes it. In any case, it's very good for all of us. It doesn't matter, even if it is a repetition. Then the third is Duruktam. Sometimes the disciple may think, this is probably not correct. So, the teacher, suppose he comes to know, does he feel bad? My own disciple, instead of accepting as gospel truth, has dared to criticize me? No, I am so happy you corrected me. I should have expressed it better, because a guru is one. He is like a father. When does a father become most happy? When his children surpass him in every way. Similarly, a guru will be more than a father when his disciples' understanding or expression or whatever in any way better than his own, he would be thousandfold happier. And if anybody is not happy, he is not a real acharya, he is a dushtacharya. But all acharyas are like that. So this is the durukta, means not wrongly interpreted, but not completely interpreted. So with all due respect, the disciple doesn't lose his respect even in the slightest, with the highest respect. So this probably is better meaning than what my guru had commented upon. That is called Duruktam. Duhu Uktam Duruktam. We had discussed until that point. Then Shankaracharya, before writing any commentary on any Upanishad, he wants to introduce the subject, and an introduction, as we all know, like a foreword, etc., it tries to encapsulate the very essence of what he understood. That is, in a few words, like an aphorism, he wants to express this should be the real essence of this entire Upanishad. Can we do that? Such a huge, voluminous book, Brihat Aranyakam. Can we compress it? Shankaracharya himself had expressed it so beautifully. No one else can do it any better. Once it is said, someone approached him. It doesn't matter whether it is true or not, but it serves the purpose for our understanding. Sir, you have written voluminous commentaries, cartloads of books. My brain is small, memory is small, understanding is little. Please summarize. And Shankara, being what he is, he said, I will summarize to you. I do not even require one full sentence. In half a sentence, I will summarize. Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya Jivo Brahma Eva Na Aparaha. Brahman alone is the truth. This world is nothing but the same Brahman looked at from the viewpoint of the mind, and mind is limited. So the way we look at the world, at ourselves, both are limited. That limitation is called mithya. It is not untruth, it is not unreal, but it is partial reality. That is called mithya. And if you want, if Brahman alone is the truth, you do not exist, I do not exist, no one else exists, everything is Brahman, therefore you are Brahman. Every individual is nothing but Brahman. What about the whole world? Yes, the whole world can be divided into the living as well as the non-living. What is the difference between these two? Absolutely none. It is like a difference between a just born baby and a 99 years old man with full intellect. So the what we call the non-living, the inorganic, in course of time evolves into organic, evolves further. The whole life is but a spiritual evolution, finally leading to spirituality. Even worldly evolution is a part of that spiritual evolution. Very interesting for us to understand this simple fact. We are being made to forget God, but that is also part of the spiritual evolution, because there is something inside which cannot tolerate this kind of dominance, slavery, limitation. And when we are dominated like this, our freedom is suppressed, and automatically our real being, it becomes a, what is called, it brings about a revolution. It rebels against, and then it turns its attention, what is it I am seeking? And ultimately, every form of suffering is a spiritual aid. Every form of suffering pushes us a little bit nearer to God. That is why God has created, out of His infinite love, out of His infinite love for this infinite universe. Is this universe infinite? A Brahman is looked at with the prism, through the prism of the mind, which consists time, space and causation, then it may look like we are looking at finite universe, but it is nothing but the infinite Brahman, which is beautifully illustrated by the very peace chant we are going to see shortly. So Shankaracharya has written, this is the essence of what this Upanishad is going to tell, and I would like to endeavor to the best of my ability, in the simplest language I can manage, so that I can convey what I understand to people who are sincere and who would like to take the guidance. As I explained yesterday, according to Swami Vivekananda, everything is interconnected. Everything is step. And evolution progresses into through three steps. First, duality. Second, what is called qualified non-dualism, and lastly, Advaita. So, when a person knows who he is, the evolution falls away, because like an evolutionary escalator, once we reach the upper floor, then it goes back to bring other people. This is the very purpose of the world. The purpose is to slowly bring everything in this world to its true nature, and there is your home. And then it goes back again and again and again to help everybody. So, Shankaracharya wants to tell us exclusively for people who have reached certain type of maturity, where they have reached the culminating point of unity in diversity, or they have identified themselves with the personal God through rituals, through upasana, and now they see that there is something much higher, about which of course nothing can be talked about, but there is something, even though we are not able to talk about it, and a tremendous longing comes. Sri Ramakrishna explains it through a beautiful analogy, that when the Kundalini reaches the sixth chakra, he perceives the reality, the truth, Brahman, as if I can just touch. But there is an obstruction, a very thin piece of glass, like the lamp, protected by the outward glass. But by God's grace, that very light pulls the person inside, breaking open. And that glass case, perhaps we can compare to Saguna Brahma. But until that point, effort becomes not only needed, but absolutely essential. But once we reach, then all efforts fall away. That is called complete self-surrender, sampurna sharanagati. And then the person attains, not by his effort, but by the grace. That's why, tasmat tvameva sharanam mamadina bandhu. Swamiji understood it and expressed it in four sentences in the hymn, Om Hrim Ritam, etc. Now, what does Shankara wants to say? First of all, Shankaracharya's time, there were several other schools, of which we do not hear nowadays. For example, Nyaya and Vaisheshika, and Yoga and Sankhya, Purva Mimamsa, these are the five schools of philosophy. They have their own limited theories about what is the world, what is Brahman, and what is their own real nature. But as I said, they have to evolve further, but stubbornly they refuse to evolve. So they are trying to propagate their own ideas as the ultimate truths. That's where Shankaracharya comes and then tries to not oppose them, not to suppress them, but to make them evolve further, to expand their hearts, to expand their intellects, so that they can understand the truth. Initial resistance might be seen, but then if a person is sincere, he will definitely come to the viewpoint of the Advaita. How do we know? Because Sri Ramakrishna says, first of all, he says, Advaita is the very last word of realization. And then secondly, he says, by whichever path a person attains to that state, he expresses in a funny way, all jackals howl exactly the same way. That means what they speak is nothing but about Brahman, Satyam, Jnanam, Anantam, Brahma. In this Sambandha Bhashya, Bhashya means commentary. Sambandha means relationship. That is, what is the relationship? That is what we are going to study and what he is going to counter. So especially two important points he wants to argue and clarify, not, remember, trying to defeat them, but to help them out of infinite compassion so that they can enlarge their view. And one of his own disciples, who was called Mandana Mishra earlier, one of the greatest living scholars of his time in Kashi or some other place, Shankaracharya, he had to counter him. And several days the debate had gone on. And then Mandana Mishra was very, very sincere person. And he was convinced. So he wanted to realize that Advaita. So he became a monk. But whether he becomes a monk or not, is not the important point. Important point is this sannyasa, or renouncing, or developing total detachment to whatever is duality, that is called sannyasa, he has taken up, chosen, and his wife, very greatly learned lady called Ubhaya Bharati, she also accepts, understands, and disappears. Wonderful stories are there about it. You can Google and find out the conversation, dialogue between Mandana Mishra and Shankaracharya. It is there, thanks to the AI. So in this Sambandha Bhashya, Shankaracharya wants to emphasize, rather to enlarge the understanding of the Purva Mimamsaka and also others, especially Purva Mimamsaka. As we discussed earlier, Veda is divided into two parts, Karma Kanda, ritualistic section of the Veda, and Jnana Kanda, that is the knowledge portion. And in some of the people's opinions, there is a total opposition between these two, but enlightened people do not take that view. Just as a baby has to grow to become a young man, an old man means a mature man. A mature man means growing up from immaturity to maturity. We have to understand only in that way. So, these Purva Mimamsakas, there are what is called a very few important points. First of all, what they say is that the Veda is a Pramana. Entire Veda is a Pramana. That is an authority on supersensory knowledge. No doubt about it. But they have developed a peculiar idea that whatever sentences we get in this Veda, they must be goading one to action. If there is a sentence where no action is indicated, that is not a pramana or valid piece of knowledge. Every ritual falls under vidhi. Vidhi means injunction. You must do this. And there are several types of vidhis, daily vidhis, occasional vidhis, special vidhis, and of course, there are certain actions which one should never do, called nishedha. So, the whole Veda is meant only for action. That is their view. And through action, one can obtain liberation or highest knowledge. So, what are the points here? First of all, Veda teaches only one thing, that is commandments. You perform this action, it is action-oriented. Whatever sentences we find, which do not command, you do this or you do not do this, they are not to be counted as Veda. There is a beautiful summary of this particular philosophy. So, for that, Shankaracharya had to defend himself into two ways. First of all, he asks the opponent, Purva Mimamsaka is called the opponent. So, do you accept the Jnana Kanda, the Upanishads? For example, the Mahavakya, Aham Brahmasmi, Tattvamasi, Ayamatma Brahma, Prajnanam Brahma, as part of the Veda, which is the authority for human guidance. The opponent says, no, because Tattvamasi, you are that. What action it is leading you to? It is not leading to any action. So therefore, whichever action, they are only laudatory, so artha pratipatti, but they do not really fall under Veda Vakya, Veda Pramana. Then how does Shankara count it? First of all, he says, you say, O opponent, the whole Veda is a Pramana. Do you say that part of the Veda has to be accepted as authority and those sentences like these Mahavakyas, they are not to be counted as authority? What do you say? Of course, the opponent says, they are there, but they are not to be relied upon, counted upon. Then, how does Shankaracharya count? Very interesting. This is only just very shortly I want to tell you. So, we convey our knowledge through words, and words must become sentences. Words themselves do not give any meaning. Words does not convey any meaning. It is only when certain words are combined in a particular way, that is called grammar, then only the words is called a sentence. Unless words become a sentence, they cannot be conveying any meaning. For example, Rama, Ravana. Suppose you hear these two words. Man, city. Hear these two words. Sir, Shankaracharya, what do these two words convey to you? Yes, you are getting Rama is there and also Ravana is there. Man is there, city is there. But what does it convey to you? They must be made into a sentence. And a sentence must contain a verb which connects these two words together. For example, Rama killed Ravana. Ah, now it makes a meaning. The man traveled to a city. Ah, now it makes a meaning. So this is what the Purva Mimamsaka says. Shankaracharya counters. So there are two types of sentences in the Veda. Two types of sentences are there in the Veda, throughout the Veda. So what are they? One is called Karya Bodhaka. Another is called Siddha Bodhaka. What does it mean? Go and perform this ritual. This is called Karya Bodhaka. If this sentence is commanding one, you want to go to Swargaloka, then you must perform this ritual, Agnihotram. That's a commandment. But the other sentences, which do not teach any of these action-oriented orders, commands, are not to be counted. And Shankaracharya counters. He says, you are wrong. There are words and their sentences. And they are indicating a truth. Some truth is there. How do you say that they do not create what is called knowledge to you? There is no commandment there. For example, we are told there is a beautiful mountain peak called Everest. It is a fact. And it is just a piece. There is nothing to say you have to go there, you have to climb. No, it is there. You are traveling. There is a traffic jam on this particular road at this point of place, space. It's a fact. Now Shankara asks, what are you trying to do now? Once you hear that, either you want to go back home or you want to change your route, even though it is not commanding you to do anything, but it is a statement of fact. Similarly, Shankaracharya, he says, Tattvamasi, the word that. Is it to be accepted as Veda Pramana? No. Once you know the truth, after knowing the truth, you don't need to do anything, because knowledge itself gives tremendous fulfillment. So once you know you are Brahman, what is the result you get? The result you get is you are completely, totally freed from every sort of bondage. You will be freed from the clutches of Tritapa, three types of sufferings. All the three sources are negated and you don't need to run anywhere. You will overcome death. You will overcome ignorance. You will enjoy eternal, infinite, unbroken bliss. That is the power of knowledge. And in Vedas, they are all there. Earlier I mentioned that the opponent's fixed firm opinion is the Vedas teach only actions. Amna yasya kriyathatvat anarthakyam atat atathanam. Whatever sentences do not convey an action, they are meaningless. Every sentence in the Veda are is geared only to make a person do something. That means sentences like Tattvamasi, the what that, Aham Brahma Asmi, sentences like I am Brahman, they are not authoritative, therefore they do not have any power. No, says, once you get knowledge, you get tremendous benefit. Just as you get benefit by practicing the rituals, you get same or even much more benefit by hearing the truths. Therefore, he says, the whole of Veda is a Pramana, and Vedas contain these two types of sentences. Some command you, order you to do something or to refrain from something. They are also valid, but there are some who point out to the highest goal called Mahavakyas. They are also Pramanas. In fact, the whole life is only to attain this, because the four ultimate, what is called, goals to be desired by every human being is called Chaturvidha Purushartha, Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. Dharma, Artha and Kama belong to this worldly experience. Moksha is the final goal because you are that. So long as you remain ignorant of your true nature, you are bound to suffer. So this is what he wants to convey, that karma cannot give liberation. Why? Because karma is done through the instrumentality of body, mind and in time and space. How much time can you do karma? Therefore, with limited cause, unlimited effect cannot be had. This is the simple truth about it. And then Vedas, in different Upanishads, again and again, quotes and tells you, you are divine. Each soul is potentially divine. But to understand that, as we already discussed, types of logic are used. Through logic, first of all, one cannot prove God. But logic is helpful to understand the teachings of the Vedas, which are called Vedanta or Upanishads, much better. So logic is not to prove the existence of Brahman or anybody. Logic cannot prove what is beyond our sense organs, but logic can help us understand the teachings of the scripture much, much better. This is called Shruti Sammata Tarka, or it is also called Sambhavana Yukti, logic based on and in accordance with the Veda. The other is Sushka Tarka. That is why there is a beautiful song in Bengali. Ke jane re kali keman, shada darshan na pai darshan. Who can understand what Mother Kali is? Even the six schools of philosophy are unable. Mother can be understood only by whom? By Shiva. Who is Shiva? Brahman. Brahman alone can understand Brahman. No one else can understand. So, Adi Shankaracharya says there is a relationship again between the Karma Kanda and the Jnana Kanda. And we have to remind ourselves, between Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda, there is a bridge that is called Upasana Kanda. So, Karma Kanda, then Upasana Kanda and Jnana Kanda. What is the relationship? Karma Kanda improves our concentration and makes us believe in God more and more, and sincerely practicing the injunctions and avoiding the prohibitions, a man experiences greater health, greater knowledge, greater bliss. This is experienceable. As we also discussed, the five types of ananda, each much higher than the other, and that is the burden of what is going to come in the 8th section of the Taittiriya Upanishad, 2nd chapter, that is Ananda Mimamsa. So there is vast degrees of difference between the lowest ananda and highest ananda, and it has nothing to do with what a person possesses. Possessions have no meaning in ananda. sometimes possessions themselves become the very source of great suffering. Power, position, wealth, everything can also help, can also hinder. So, this is what we have to understand. So, rituals, what do? They improve our concentration. They improve our comprehension. They purify our heart slowly but surely. And most important, they give us the result of what is promised. And once we understand that what the karmakanda of the Vedic part is telling the truth, our faith in that grows, and then the very Vedas, like a loving mother, gently leads. So you have done all these external rituals. You reap the result. Now, every physical action involves tremendous amount of what is called labor, time, energy. But the same thing can be attained without losing time, without wasting energy, without spending long time. How, sir? Now you do the same ritual inside, which is called upasana. But we have to be extraordinarily careful without going through the actual physical, external, ritualistic part. It is not possible to jump, like you cannot jump into college from kindergarten to a high school to college to university. No, you cannot do it. You will have to step by step, class by class, you have to evolve further. We should not forget that. Only when a person has sufficiently spent time, experiences the promised results, and looks forward to even greater improvement, for them, at the appropriate time, the guru comes and tells, now is the time for you to turn your attention inward, which is indicated by the Vanaprasthashrama, and slowly you do the same things. Here, even better results are there because the very samskaras are being purified and directed upwards. So, it doesn't take time. You can do much better worship, mental worship, the best flowers, best fruits, best food, best environment, best decoration, all sitting, closing your eyes and in your imagination. Since the whole universe is an imagination, this also is a nothing but an wonderful imagination. But this imagination will give the highest type of joy. Slowly it leads to oneness with the reality of the chosen deity. The devotee becomes one with the deity through this process of manasika upasana. Upasana means manasika only. This is the second stage which the guru introduces to the student. Then he becomes qualified. And then when he beholds the glory of God, the chosen deity, and then guru comes and tells, now, even in upasana, there is a difference between the devotee and the deity. And that is the final obstruction. And that should be completely destroyed. And that which destroys this difference between the devotee and the deity is called jnanam. What is that jnanam? There is no two, I and you. There is only one. I can call it sarvam brahma, or I can call it I am brahma. Even that is an expression in our day-to-day language. So, this is how the development takes place. So, Veda, it guides every aspirant, provided he is sincere. That is the only requirement. From the wherever the sincere aspirant is, to the next step, to the next step, to the next step. And analogically, it is explained as dualism, qualified non-dualism, and what is called non-dualism. So, this is how Veda or Upanishads guide a person. So, even though karmakanda itself can help us, but not give us liberation. because the unlimited cannot be attained by the limited. There is a Vedic expression, Upanishadic expression, the uncreated cannot be attained by the created. That is the ultimate, this one. So, should we discard karmakanda? No. There should be no hatred, no attachment to rituals. Karma not only implies ritualism, which we may mistake, sitting there and drawing some lines and then offering. No. One's own duties, according to one's own station in life, also falls under karma. But if it is directed towards a higher end, it becomes karma yoga. So, karma leads to karma yoga, and anybody can attain to God through that karma yoga. So, what should be the relationship? Karma helps us gradually to detach ourselves from this world, and our longing to be united with God. That is the purpose of this any type of rituals. And the nearer we approach God, the knowledge becomes stronger. So that is why for the beginners, Veda directs all beings to perform action. Finally, when the person is ready, it leads to tattvamasi. Therefore, without practicing these rituals, one cannot attain, jump to the Jnanakanda. But Jnanakanda cannot be attained, jumped at, without Karmakanda. It is like a staircase. So, one should not stop with rituals. So, one should progress further. This is the relationship between rituals and knowledge. So, karma means one's own duty, plus also all the rituals, worships, etc., leads to upasana. Upasana further helps the aspirant to move towards what is called fitness, to understand that final truth, Mahavakya, Tattvamasi, and that is what this Brihad, every Upanishad teaches. Of course, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad teaches. Finally, it culminates in that knowledge, Aham, Brahma, Asmi. And as usual, every Veda, every Upanishad has its own specialized Shanti Patha, peace chant, and which beautiful peace chant, and that is Purnamadha, Purnamidam, Purnat Purnamadachate, Purnasya Purnamadaya, Purnam Eva Vasishate. And this is a very peculiar, very special peace chant. Why is it peculiar? Because there is no prayer here. Please remove all the obstacles. Let there be no misunderstanding between my teacher and myself. Let my body and mind be strong. Let all the divine qualities grow in me. They're all prayers to God. But here, the highest Mahavakya itself is the peace chant. What is that? Purnasya Purnamadaya, Purnam Eva Vasishyate. So, the infinite has given birth to this universe as it were, not really. From infinite, you deduct infinite, it remains infinite. You combine two infinites, it remains only infinite, like zero. Zero plus zero is zero. Zero multiplied by zero is zero. Zero divided by zero is zero. Zero subtracted by zero is also zero. And that is why zero is the symbol of infinity. This beautiful peace chant we will talk about in our next class. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagatgurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Muhurmuhu. May Ramakrishna Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with Bhakti. Ramakrishna.